You're listening to PorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast, brought to you by OnTap Credit Union. They listen carefully to your needs and make sure you have the right services, low-cost loans, and expert financial advice for you, your business, and your employees. Whatever your needs may be, tap into the services at OnTap Credit Union. And now, The Porchcast. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to episode 60. It's the big 60th episode of The Porchcast.
6-0.
This is Tristan Chan, your host, along with co-host Sammy Hartman.
Hello, good afternoon.
And Sam Lael on the behind the ones and twos.
I actually gave myself a microphone this time, too, so we'll see what happens.
Moving on up in the world.
Everyone watch out.
Yeah.
After Hunter only gave us 10% in the last episode, we kicked it off. Actually, no, we have to give a big shout-out to our other co-host, Hunter Grandin, who got engaged over the weekend.
I know, good for him.
Love is just a beautiful thing.
Went out to Russian bitter. River, fell in love with Pliny the Elder, Vinny, and Natalie just kind of brought love to the air, and he decided to pop the question to his now fiance. Yes. That's very exciting.
Soon to be betrothed.
Even more exciting, though, we are recording from Holidaily Brewing here in Golden, Colorado. Lucky to be joined by Karen Hertz, founder of Holidaily. How's it going?
It's going great. Thank you for making the trek west.
We have a big episode in store for you. Lots of really interesting developments here at Holidaily. And of course, we'll go touch on some of the big beer news throughout the industry. But it's also a big time weekend, folks, because Game of Thrones and Avengers Endgame are clashing for the biggest, most explosive, craziest weekend of all, where everybody just basically dies.
Yeah, that's what I don't even watch Game of Thrones, but I'm expecting a lot of death and destruction. Yeah. It's going to be great.
We'll get to some of that if we have time, but I want to jump right into Holidaily. For those who aren't familiar, 100% gluten-free brewery here in Golden, Colorado, and they've seen explosive growth since 2016. Karen, can you give us a little bit of the backstory of how you all got started?
Definitely. Holidaily is a combination of my personal life, my education, and my career, and I just blended them all. So,
which is the dream.
That's right. Yeah. Career-wise, I was working at MillerCoors. I was doing distribution for them, getting beer from Golden to distributors in the central region. Mm-hmm. I got an MBA in entrepreneurial studies. I did ever think I was starting a company. I actually was mad at myself because I went into the MBA thinking, you got to pick a track like marketing or finance. And I couldn't. I kind of liked doing a little bit of everything.
Sure.
So the entrepreneurship program really fed that piece, and I got to do a little of everything versus all of one subject. Yeah. So I had that degree. And then health-wise, I ran into some significant health issues. In 2007, I was diagnosed with melanoma. In 2008, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer and an autoimmune thyroid disease. Had my thyroid removed, and part of my treatment was cutting out gluten. And I love beer, and I was working at Coors, and started trying gluten-free beers out there, trying to drink cider, and really felt like there wasn't any great craft gluten-free beer out there.
Absolutely.
And it motivated me to start homebrewing a little bit and learning more about ingredients and why were these beers bad or why didn't they exist at all. And got really lucky to run into a woman named Twyla Souls, who owns a malting company north of Fort Collins called Grouse Malt House. And she was a couple of years ahead of me, but had found a way to malt gluten-free grains so that people like me could make beer with them. So we use primarily millet and buckwheat rather than barley and wheat in our beers, and we source it all here locally.
That's really neat.
Yeah.
So awesome. I can't count the number of times I've run into people who, you know, used to love drinking beer,
right,
and can no longer do so due to health reasons or whatnot. And I always refer them to Holidaily.
Well, thank you
because,
for doing that.
You know, it's incredible. I think we're very lucky to have you guys in our backyard.
Thanks.
But like you kind of said, you know, from the onset, I had for a very long time had a hard time finding a great gluten-free option.
Yep.
That didn't really that actually tasted more like beer, you know?
Right.
And I think you all have been very impressive since the get-go of creating this alternative version of beer. Well, still creating beer, but with alternative ingredients, yep, that cater to the gluten-free community.
Thank you. I mean, the goal from the beginning wasn't like, hey, I see this hole in the market, let's make some mediocre beer and see if we can plug it. It was more like, let's make great craft beer that happens to be gluten-free.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Now, when it comes to millet and buckwheat, mm-hmm, what are some of the challenges involved with, because I know it's an entirely different process in the sense of some of the, I guess, the finer aspects of difficulties.
Yep.
Tell us, touch on that.
Yeah, there are definitely challenges with it. So one, it's more expensive. Two, it's less efficient, so we have to utilize more of it in order to get the amount of sugars out you would normally get from barley or wheat. And then a big challenge with it is the actual size, physical size of the grain. It's a lot smaller than barley or wheat. So if you were to utilize it in a traditional system, you would either get a stuck mash very easily, mm-hmm, or it even goes through the filter at the bottom of your lauter. So I went to CSU knowing that this had been a challenge for other gluten-free breweries or other breweries brewing with these ingredients. Went up to CSU and said, hey, if I custom built a screen for your system up there, could we try it out? And they were game, and we tried it, and it worked. So that's it.
That's awesome.
No,
That's how it all started.
It really was a crazy day because we, you know, you brew, and then we went up to CSU, we brewed, left for 3 weeks, drive back up. On my drive up, all I'm so selfishly thinking is, it'd be great to have a good beer today. I mean, that was really the only thing on my brain. And the way home, I was thinking was, how am I going to start this company?
Yeah.
And it was all in one day. Wow. It was a bizarre day. But we'd figured out how to better utilize these grains just with this custom screen. So that's what we have on our 10-barrel system.
And you all are still using kind of the same structural screen that you designed.
Yep. And then once you get through that process, it's all the same as brewing.
So it's all the same.
So hops are gluten-free. Water's gluten-free. Yeah. We can access gluten-free yeast easily. And really, yeast, for the most part, is gluten-free. So that part was easy. It was the grain that was the big, big challenge for us. And then we'll talk a little more about what we're doing across the street, but we have a new system coming in that won't be utilizing the screen. It's great for what it's used, but we're moving on to a bigger and better system across the street.
That's super exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when you all first started, was it difficult to find a brewer who kind of, you know, could match what you were trying to accomplish?
Well, I was really worried in the beginning, like, who the heck am I going to find to come and brew all gluten-free beer?
Sure.
I really was worried. And this wasn't 6 months ago. You know, this was 4 or 5 years ago that I'm starting to come up with this idea. And gluten-free isn't really known. And I got so, so lucky. I happened to post on the Brewers Association website. And at the same time, luckily, Wayne Burns happened to be looking for a job. This is a 25-year brewing veteran. This guy knows more about brewing than maybe anybody in Colorado. He's a genius. We call him the beer doctor because he really is amazing. And he was willing to take on the challenge. He had been brewing for 20-plus years.
He had brewed at, I believe, Bell's.
Bell's.
Coonan's.
Yeah. Wing Coop. I mean, you name
Jagged
it.
Jagged Mountain here in town as well.
Yeah.
Now he's got his own partnership with his partner, actually, Wayne's family.
It's Burns Family Artisan Ales.
Burns Family Artisan Ales.
Yeah, and we love him. So he was with me from the very beginning. And really, in the beginning, it was he and I in my kitchen,
figuring
this out while we were getting the tap room finished and the building built out. To get a guy with that caliber of skills, that's what totally gave us our great start. I knew we could figure it out and start, and I was hoping for that.
Mm-hmm.
But to have a guy that can brew anything, be willing to do this, is what changed the game for us. In my business plan, at the end of year one, I was like, oh, we'll have 3 beers on tap, and we'll be distributing one. And at the end of year one, we had 10 beers on tap, and we were distributing 2. But it's because he could just come out of the gate with crazy beers that were just great beer. It didn't matter that it was gluten-free. So he was with us for 2 years, and then he and Laura went and started Burns, but we still talk a lot, or I have a question like, oh, what do we do with this? Or how do we handle this? And he actually has Holidaily in his tap room too.
Awesome.
So he has a gluten-free option there. Sure. So it has ended great and we're still good friends, but thank God I found him because it made my idea respected, because it was very easy to come in and do this and people would be like, whatever. But it caught people's attention when Wayne Burns is brewing our beer and we were coming out with legit beers. So it made a huge difference.
You mentioned that kind of the stigma.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's now a little bit better when you're going out in the market, or do you still feel like there's a little bit of a hurdle to get past?
There's definitely a hurdle. There's a hurdle in education, both in the fact that gluten-free beer can taste good, for sure. There's always a stigma tied to that. So we just got to get people to try it a lot of the times. The other is really educating people the difference between gluten-reduced and gluten-free and why it matters. And the fact that everything we make is gluten-free, so anybody can drink it.
Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm familiar with, I mean, when it comes to reduced gluten, I believe it's an enzyme that you introduce,
it's true.
Correct? Right?
Yeah, so in a gluten-reduced beer, it's brewed with barley or wheat,
mm-hmm.
and then the enzyme, which is, it's brewer's Clarex or Clarity Firm, gets dropped in. And what it does is it takes a gluten protein and it chops it into very, very small pieces. The gluten is still in your beer. It's just in a much smaller form than it was initially.
And does that just make it so that your body can generally process it a little bit easier?
Some people can process it easier, yeah. Okay. But what they're saying is people with celiac or high sensitivity, it doesn't matter.
Sure.
And they're still getting sick from that beer. So the difference between that and a Holidaily is every single thing we use is gluten-free from the very beginning. And so it just ensures that anybody can drink it. Yeah, so that's really a challenge, is educating, exactly like you even asking about it,
sure.
is great, because people don't, even brewers don't know. They're like, well, they says it, you know, it tests less than 20 parts per million. Yes, it does, but it's because these pieces are so small that the tests aren't picking up those pieces of gluten. They're just tiny. And some people can tolerate them, and some people can't. So we're just making sure we're making beer that everyone can have, regardless of your sensitivity. And I do think people come in with a chip on their shoulder every once in a while, or just unsure, but challenge accepted. I think we we can meet their expectations.
Now, now I know that you all are kind of at this next phase in your growth, and Sammy, I'm sure you're interested in hearing a little bit about kind of scaling up in this
mm-hmm.
sense.
Growing up, like...
Yeah.
What, so it's been 4 or 5 years, 4 years?
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
And now you are moving.
What was the barrelage last year?
Yeah. Yeah, so we opened 2016 and then we had around 250 barrels year one.
Yep.
Year two was 750.
Wow.
And year three was 1,200. So
incredible.
Doubling or tripling every
That's
year
awesome.
So
yeah.
far. So, and we feel like the demand is still out there. We just can't produce enough at
sure.
this point, which
yeah.
is a good problem to have, but still a problem. So we're building a new facility across the street. It's a 10,000 square foot strictly production facility. We'll keep our tap room here. At capacity, with what we have over there right now, we can do 10,000 barrels. We're hoping to hit about 3,000 this year, just because it's
awesome.
Not open yet. We'll be open. We'll be brewing in there within the next couple of weeks in May.
So cool. Very
Do you have a packaging line too?
We do. So we have a canning line that we've had here, a Wild Goose line, and everything we buy is brand new, which is also an expense that we take on. We do all the packaging
Smart,
here
though.
Too,
that's
but
great
we
investment.
Can't have
great investment.
And we can't have cross contamination
exactly.
in
sure.
our beer, right?
Yeah.
So we want to be sure that everybody's safe when they're consuming Holidaily products. It's our whole brand.
Sure.
And then we're upgrading the Goose across the street in terms of packaging. We have a depalletizer, a SCA
awesome.
Come in, some post fill automation coming. So we're automating it a little bit more.
That's great, though. But those Wild Goose lines are pretty modular that you can add
yes.
and expand.
Exactly.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, we just started with two heads.
Yeah.
Now we've got four. We're automating it a little bit more. So that'll be moving across the street. As soon as we get all the tanks emptied over here, then in the tap room, then we can get them going across
will
the street.
Will you continue to brew here?
We will. We're going to... So when we opened here, we had 20 barrels of fermentation, and we're at 190 now.
Wow.
So we will sell. So if anybody's looking for 20 barrel fermenters, here's a plug.
Homebrewers out there.
You let me know. Yeah. Anybody, let me know. So we'll probably be selling a majority of our tanks out of the tap room. And then maybe spread some seating out. We have a pretty small tap room seating wise right now, so we'd like to spread that out a little bit. But we'll keep probably 20 to 40 barrels here just for one-offs our little pilot system. And we get so much information in the tap room on what should be our next packaged beer, what people like, that I want to continue utilizing that for that.
Now, talking about styles a little bit, we've been able to try some of your beers before the show started. I'm drinking the red IPA. It's fantastic. I would have no idea that this was not gluten-free.
Thank you.
But any approach towards kind of more specialty styles? You all have a core of your blonde, the porter, the stout, right?
Yeah.
IPA.
Yeah.
What else have you all been kind of playing around with?
We do a couple Belgians. People are surprised that we can do basically a wheat style beer without wheat.
Yeah.
But we've been able to pull that off a couple times. We've done a Hefeweizen, a Belgian. We have a couple different.
Are there any limitations style wise that?
It's a good question. We aren't running into that yet. What's really cool about this, people have been brewing with barley and wheat for hundreds of years, and here's the gluten-free community, and we've been brewing for like 8 years.
Sure.
So everything is still experimental, and even, here I am saying, millet and buckwheat, and in 5 years we might meet again, and I'll be like, it's all quinoa.
Right.
Like, I don't know. But this is what we're finding that's working right now. But sure. We're so on the forefront of this that there's a lot of opportunity. What has been cool is we haven't run into a style that we're like, oh, we can't figure this out. We feel like we've figured out a lot of them. We just haven't had time to hit them all yet. So yeah. We're still getting, we had a quad on, a 12% quad on a couple weeks ago. There's not limitations, I don't think. We can really do this. It's just a matter of experimentation and time.
Well, and it's got to be a pretty tight-knit community, too, of gluten-free brewers across the country. Like,
yeah.
Do you just kind of have a network that you kind of call?
Totally.
Like, hey,
yeah.
Have you tried this? Or do you have any?
Yeah, there's 7,000 breweries in the U.S. 12 of us are dedicated
12.
Gluten-free.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and we're the only certified dedicated gluten-free in Colorado right now.
And this new facility will become the largest production facility in the U.S.
In the U.S.
Dedicated gluten-free facility.
Yep.
So cool.
Yeah.
Really neat.
Thanks. So we really are focused on getting beer out to Colorado this year. We distribute already Denver Metro, kind of Fort Collins to Colorado Springs, a little bit in the mountains, but by the end of the year, I want you to be able to go to any town in Colorado, and if you're gluten-free, be able to get a holiday. Or if you're not, you can still get a holiday.
And the cool thing that I've been seeing, a lot more breweries around town are able to carry holiday as well. Because, I know from experience working for a brewery myself, I can't count the number of times people either call in, write in, or even stop into the tap room saying, like, hey, do you all have any gluten-free options?
Totally.
It's like, we do, but they don't have alcohol in them.
I know.
I've got
kombucha.
I've got some water over there. Like,
yeah. Soda.
The water station.
But I'm seeing more and more holiday
available.
Yep.
I love that.
I'm
glad
Denver,
you noticed.
So
we're
weird.
In about 35 or 40 different breweries, Denver
that's
Metro.
Awesome.
And it's great for both of us. One is there's customers coming in asking for beer, and Resolute's been a big part of this from... They were actually my first brewery that we had our beer in.
That's
so
awesome.
I love
That's
the
really
Resolute
cool.
guys. But they see the value in, if I'm going out with 10 people, I influence where we go. Because I'm the high maintenance one, whatever you want to call it. But if you don't have a gluten-free option, we're not either not going to your location or we're not going to stay very long.
Sure.
So if you have a gluten-free option, I'm happy and I'll drink a couple Holidaylies and my 9 friends will drink
whatever
brand it is. So people are realizing the value in the influence of that gluten-free person. And then for us, of course, it's awesome because a consumer walks in, they say, hey, do you have gluten-free beer? Well, we don't make it, but we have this awesome local gluten-free beer. And it's just, when it's a brewer or a bartender or a bar manager saying that about us, it just reinforces, like, this is a legit beer. So it's been a great partnership all around.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Now, aside from being a badass who has beaten cancer multiple times, I also have heard tales of you surviving an avalanche.
Are you?
Tell us about this. God. What was
I know the source of this. I know the source of this story. I was skiing at Vail. And if you know where Pete's Lift is at Vail, I don't know if there's any skiers in the crowd, but there's a gate opening there. And it was a powder day, and I'm a Colorado girl, I'm a native, I grew up skiing, so I thought I was worthy of sneaking through this gate with my friends. I wasn't alone, but we snuck through the gate, and I mean snuck through, there's a sign that says it could be avalanche, but we went through the gate, and it very much got caught in a bad situation. So we got caught in an avalanche. I ended up, we need a visual, but my head was down the mountain, so I was upside down, looking up, head down the mountain, buried to my neck, skis off, poles gone. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
So yeah, I was trying to do a visual. I don't know if I need to repeat, but my head was down the hill, buried to my neck, skis off, poles gone, and I didn't think any of my friends got caught in it. I thought it was just me. And that was, I screamed up because my head was above the snow.
At least your head was above the snow. Oh, my goodness.
And I had made major efforts for that to happen. Like, you're supposed to swim. Yep. I was doing that. I didn't know what I was doing. But I landed above my head above the snow and just screamed, I'm okay. And my friend said, me too. And he was, like, 10 feet to my right. He had got caught in it, too.
Oh, my gosh.
And he was missing everything. But we were both above the snow.
Sure.
So he came and helped me dig out, and then we had to dig for all our stuff, and then we skied out of it.
You're like, that was crazy.
Yeah, and that was after my two cancer diagnoses. I might be like a cat or something.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Three of my lives have been used up. Yeah. So it was pretty scary. It was.
Did you find all your stuff?
We found all our stuff.
Holy cow.
And we actually didn't tell anybody, and then, like, neither of us could sleep
night.
Yeah. And I called the Vail Ski Patrol the next day, because neither of us slept, and
the guilt.
I was like, I feel like, the guilt, like, we should tell somebody. So I called, and he went to do a profile, like, okay, how old are you? And I was like, 32, you know, where do you live? Golden. Like, I'm a mom in Golden. He's like, you don't fit my normal profile. I was like, I know. Really
but
sorry.
It looks really fun.
He's thinking like 21-year-old crazy man, you know? I was like, I'm a suburban mom.
Suburban moms can kick ass.
But he did say, you know, you should always tell somebody because, and this is just my public service announcement, you don't know who's below you.
Sure.
And so had we told someone and someone was missing at the end of the day, that's the first place they would start looking.
Sure.
So luckily they weren't missing anybody. And that was all okay. So, yes.
Wow.
That happened.
Crazy.
I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah. No. Well, we're going to take a quick break. But once again, we're joined by Karen Hertz of Hollow Daily Brewing, the Wonder Woman of gluten-free craft beer.
Thank you.
We'll be back in just a moment. Hang tight. This is episode 60 of the Porchcast on porchdrinking.com. We want to give a special thank you to our friends at OnTap Credit Union with locations in Golden and Arvada. OnTap Credit Union has supported brewery employees for over 64 years, including Hollow Daily. They actually helped support Hollow Daily in their growth over the past 3 years, and they want to help support your breweries and your brewery employees as well. They want to make sure that you have the right services, low-cost loans, expert financial advice for you and your business, as well as your employees. Whatever your needs may be, tap into the services at OnTap Credit Union. That's www.ontapcu.org. All right, everyone, and welcome back to episode 60 of the Porchcast. Just a reminder, be sure to follow us on all of your listening devices, whether that's Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, Apple Play, whatever it is. Be sure to follow the Porchcast, subscribe, and give us a like if you enjoy what you're listening to. Once again, we are back here at Hollow Daily Brewing with Karen Hertz, founder of Hollow Daily, joined by co-host, Sammy Hartman and Sam Lael. Karen, we want to jump back into kind of your all story. Sammy, you had a question about what's going on here right now.
Yeah, so, I mean, with the expansion and with your old head brewer leaving, that tell me more about who your new head brewer is and if there's a story behind it.
I mean, story, not a huge
so did he get stuck in an avalanche? And then you found him
in the avalanche.
You're pulled like, him out of the avalanche.
Actually, the ski patrol guy that I called.
No, you rescued him from an avalanche.
After the avalanche. No. We really, with this expansion, we're in need of a new head brewer, and sure. Wayne's transitioned to his brewery. So once again, we put some ads out, and we're looking for someone to really lead the next generation of Holidaily. Holidaily 2.0, we like to call it.
2.0.
And found a great head brewer in Alan Weinhausen. He brewed at Pike's Peak Brewery for 4.5 years, and they've been through a big expansion similar to what we're about to go through. So he's a great option for us. He does a lot with the guild. I do a lot with the guild. So we had some commonalities there and just Colorado craft and an interest in that and supporting that. And it's been a great transition.
That's awesome.
For us.
Very
cool.
Is he local? Does he live up here in Golden?
He lives in Highlands Ranch, so he's a little bit south of here. He's got a chemistry degree. He's got a brewing degree from UC Davis. He loses me at peptides. Just tell me how to sell it, buddy. I got that down. You worked about the science and the chemistry.
I was following you until you started
peptides. Then I lose you. So we've got a good agreement there. It works out.
I have to tell you that this Bomb Cyclone Belgian is delicious.
Yeah, tell us the story behind the Bomb Cyclone.
Well, yeah, that one's, people have heard a lot about it lately, but we were brewing that beer the morning of the Bomb Cyclone, and we knew the storm was coming. So Alan came in early and started brewing, and the power went out in the middle of the brew. And really what it was supposed to be was our Fat Randy's IPA. but luckily he had boiled it enough that we kind of just left it and waited until we had power back, which we had power out for about 23 hours
Holy
here.
Wow.
So full day of power out, and I'm thinking we're going to throw this whole batch away.
Yep.
Not good. Came in the next morning, and the brewers were like, you know, it's not Fat Randy's, but we could think we can salvage this thing. So let's make something up and throw some Belgian yeast in there. And this is how we landed at this 8% Bomb Cyclone. We're like, well, we have to name it the Bomb Cyclone.
Yeah.
So we did. So it's kind of just a fun beer that we tried out. We threw Belgian yeast in there. It's 8%, so it'll get the job done.
Yep.
We can't ever duplicate it, so if everybody loves it, I'm really sorry. This is it.
You're just going to have to cut power.
Yeah. Well, that's true. We could do that. But yeah, it was kind of a fun little experiment, and it made for a great story, and I'm just, thank God we didn't have to throw it away.
Well, and that's
the other thing. Yes.
You know, making lemonade out of lemons.
Exactly.
You're like, listen, I'm not going to waste this, so let's use it.
And it was great that they could come up with something creative and fun, and
sure.
We kind of made fun of it and made fun of ourselves and just owned it, and we're like, you know what, this is fun and something different, so that's what we went with.
This is a silly question. Can you barrel-age gluten-free beers?
We can. So yeah, we barrel-age, we do a bourbon barrel-aged Imperial Stout every Christmas called Santa's Nightcap.
A great name.
In general, spirits are gluten-free.
Okay.
Because when you distill something, when you're doing the evaporation process, gluten cannot be evaporated. So spirits are gluten-free. If they're not, it's because something gets added in later in the process. And then to make sure, just because we've talked about the brand security for us, we test every barrel that we get. We work with the distilleries in terms of who we use, and then we test the barrel before we put any liquid in there.
Man, that's so fun, though. That's just another thing that is like, you know,
totally.
We are just as much a brewery as like a, you know, gluten, like a glutenous brewery.
Just happen to use gluten-free grain.
Yeah.
Really cool.
So I've been wondering this whole time, with the different ingredients you use, can you guys enter stuff in competitions? Like, do they follow BJCP guidelines and stuff?
So so there's kind of a different. There's always a gluten-free category, which is frustrating to us because we haven't done great in it. But I think our beers are all competing against each other. So our Riva Stout is against our IPA, is against our Blonde, is against our Santa's Nightcap, or whatever we decide to enter.
Yeah, so they're siloed in their own category. They're
just
not
gluten-free.
Like,
yeah,
you can't just like drop it into
enough to be able to stand out against like only gluten-free IPAs.
Blonde, or yeah. So it's here these judges are tasting a million kinds of beer. So that's been a frustrating process for us. We've entered our pumpkin into the traditional pumpkin category of GABF before just to try it. Did pretty well. So we're welcome to join in any of that. And we'll do some more probably in the traditional category because we think we can hang with some of those beers. And the gluten-free, we're kind of accepting the fact that it's a difficult category because of the mixed types of beers. And I think there's an expectation, like it should taste gluten-free, and our beer doesn't taste gluten-free. Yeah. So we think we might struggle in the category because of that, which I will take that struggle over tasting gluten-free.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to jump into some of the big topics from the past couple weeks. Karen's going to stay on and chime in when appropriate. But I think we can't start anywhere else but with the Craft Brewers Conference, which actually was just in our backyard just 2 weeks ago. How was CBC for you guys?
It was fun. It was good. It was great.
Begrudgingly
fun. It was awesome. It was busy. I feel like I'm still in the residual hangover from it.
So for those who aren't as familiar, the Craft Brewers Conference is the national trade kind of conference. They also have a giant trade show, but it very industry forward focusing, and it rotates cities every year, and we just happened to get it back in Denver. If you hadn't checked out the article, we actually broke the news about their decision. Originally, CBC was supposed to take place in Indianapolis, but because of legislation laws that were passed in Indianapolis about same-sex bathrooms, that the BA actually wanted to make a move towards inclusiveness and decided to bring it back to Denver just 5 years after it was here last. And so pretty cool decision to from the BA to really advocate for inclusiveness, and we got it back in Denver, so yeah. Pretty cool. But we also broke the news that CBC will be heading to San Antonio next year, San Diego in 2021, and then Minneapolis in 2022. So,
yeah, all places that I've never been before.
Yeah. So. What of those three are you all most excited for?
I mean, I don't know. I like San Antonio is supposed to be cool, right?
Yeah, Riverwalk.
Riverwalk.
Yeah. Supposed to be really cool.
I mean, I just like going places and hanging out with all
I struggled
all of us.
Having it at home.
Yeah.
Oh, and it, that well, makes it harder.
It's harder. I mean, it's just like GABF Light. And, you know, you've got to be on your game for 5 days. And
you feel like the host.
Yeah.
You guys hosted a ton of events.
We had a lot of events,
so,
and it was very exhausting.
Very tired.
It makes it that it's already tiring. But like when we went to Nashville or Philly or Portland or wherever it might be, you just go and it's half vacation, half work.
Oh yeah,
you're learning.
We were joking that you know, this year we had to plan all the parties, whereas
totally,
in the past,
yeah,
all you had to do is worry about which parties you wanted to go
exactly.
to.
Exactly. So having to be at home, it feels like extra work.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah.
It
so
was
I'm
good
not
though.
Anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. It was great. I mean, you know, it's fun to see familiar faces around town and.
Sure.
It was. I think that everyone enjoyed their time. Yeah. They got a taste of all of the weather that Colorado has to offer.
That's true.
That
they saw like
they
five
saw,
different seasons.
Yep,
basically.
They saw a little bit of everything. They were like, "You really think it's going to snow tomorrow?" And I was like, "It's 100%.
It's like winter is coming. Yeah. Oh wait, no, spring is coming.
Yeah,
no wait, winter is
coming.
Well, spring came, winter came back too.
I was like, "No, it's definitely going to snow. Like, believe me."
And it is fun to highlight Colorado beers and breweries and get your own brand out there and in front of other brewers. So that's an advantage of it. The disadvantage is you feel like it's even more work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, we also had lots of news breaking kind of in the usual trend of craft beer, lots of big moves happening around the industry. Just yesterday, it was announced that Weyerbacher Brewing actually filed for bankruptcy and is actually selling 55% of their ownership to private equity. That was kind of the big story recently. We also had cases where Ninkasi was acquired by Legacy Breweries, which is going to be a new kind of similar to Canarchy and Duvel Morgat. It's going to aim to be kind of a conglomerate of breweries. I think they're targeting multiple locations across the U.S. right now. What do you all make of some of those moves more recently?
I mean, I think I have yet to read the article, but I saw today that Jonathan Trakes released something about how kind of grouping small craft brewers may be the new trend.
Sure.
That maybe it's a power in numbers kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you're all kind of falling back on each other. And I think that Canarchy has been doing really well. But this, I speak from absolutely no experience because I saw the article and I was like, I will read that later.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, we've seen that here locally with Funkworks Brewing joining forces with 21st Amendment and Brooklyn Brewing. And then, like you mentioned, Canarchy has their entire burgeoning empire with Cigar City and Three Weavers and whatnot.
Perrin
Brewing, yep. Continuing to grow more and more. They've got a brewery out in Texas now. I can't escape from my
mind. Yeah, I can't remember that one either.
Deep Ellum.
Yeah. That's right. I think multiple trends developing. I think, you know, you're starting to see more breweries opening up multiple locations within their specific region. And you're also seeing more breweries team up to pull resources, distribution arms, and also education and knowledge as well. But I think it's interesting because I didn't think that this kind of consolidation would be happening so quickly after the boom. Karen, from a business owner's perspective, is this something that you all would potentially entertain down the line? Or do you all have kind of a desire to remain more independent?
Yeah, I think with so many breweries, people are trying to figure out and navigate how to make it work.
Sure.
Because it really is starting to get saturated.
Sure.
I do think Holiday Lays in a unique spot just in terms of this gluten-free thing. Like I said, we're one of 12 in the U.S. And
sure.
So I think we would make a great partner to people in terms of something like this because it's something that they don't have
sure.
in their grouping.
Yeah, we saw Sierra Nevada adding
Sufferfest, yeah.
Earlier this year, and so kind of yep. similar.
So I think they're kind of watching. People are just like, is this thing for real? How long
sure.
is this going to last? Are they really making great beer? So, you know, not close to it all, but I think we're in a little bit of a different boat just because of this niche that we have. And we're so focused on really getting beer out to people right now and in a position to do it with the new brewery and where we're headed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, I kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier, but Weldworks actually just announced recently that they were opening up a Colorado yeah. Springs tap room in the coming months. What do you all make of that move?
I mean, I think that especially if you are a brewery that's located in Greeley, considering how saturated the market is in Denver, you have to find a place that, like, you already know that the consumer in Denver is thirsty for your beer. You don't need to open up a tap room there. You can just open up, you know, bar, like, accounts there. But opening up something in Colorado Springs, I think, is brilliant. I think that it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
I honestly do. I mean, I think that the Springs is still kind of untapped. I think that they're thirsty down there, and I think that they certainly want a little bit more craft. And you know, there are some great breweries down there already.
Sure.
But the addition of Weldworks is not only going to kind of enlighten the consumer, but I think that it's just going to raise the floor of the drinkers there anyway to then explore the other breweries that are in the city. I think that it's awesome.
I was speaking with someone yesterday who kind of was asking a little bit about that move in particular, and they're like, why not Denver? Why wouldn't you open in Denver? And I, you know, I think it's really interesting because he was also, you know, when I explained to him that, you know, if you open a brewery in Denver, you're basically cannibalizing a lot of the core demographic that from the Denver region that generally goes up to, mm-hmm. to Greeley yeah. on the weekends.
For sure.
For their releases.
Yeah, that's an hour drive.
Yeah.
But the Springs to Greeley is damn near 2.5 hours.
Exactly.
Maybe 3.
And you know, he made a good point. He said, you know, smart people don't make decisions that aren't, you know, first predicated mm-hmm. by a lot of research mm-hmm. right. and thoughtful thinking. And so, you know, when you see someone that makes a move that may seem a little curious, you've got to think in their mindset of saying, like, all right, now, first, I'm going to trust that this was a good decision. Mm-hmm. But secondly, why did they make that decision?
Right.
And so, you know, when I first saw the news, I was like, all right, I know that they're doing this for a reason.
Yep.
And it's not just because, you know, they just rolled the dice with it.
Right.
It's very thoughtful of saying, like, you know, we already have a core group that's coming up to Greeley, and we don't want to lose that market share.
Yep.
So.
There's a lot of room for population growth in Colorado Springs.
In
not
Springs,
that there
yep.
isn't in Denver, but, you know, it's good to go where people are, but it's smarter to go to where people are going
where
to be.
People are going.
You know, I mean, I think they're just... They're looking, you know, 12 steps ahead.
Yep. Plus, our buddy Ryan Hannigan is just going to be drinking all their beer anyway.
Yeah,
they've got an instant
yep.
cash cow.
Lifer right there.
And he just had a kid, so.
Yeah, the whole family, start him young.
Yeah, in like 20 years, that kid will be contributing to,
yep.
to the tap room
yeah.
over there.
Probably their second tap room down there in 20 years, right?
Absolutely. Now, but the bigger news, I think, you know, we also saw Avery selling 70% to Miles San Miguel after their initial 30% investment. Even bigger than that, I would say recently, you know, we saw that Constellation's investment in Ballast Point may not have been as thoughtful as originally, you know.
$1 billion brewery.
Yeah, spending a $1 billion investment on Ballast Point, and now recently they just announced closures of two of their brew pubs, two of their locations, and also abandoning plans for their San Francisco brew pub. What do you all make of this news, Sammy?
I mean, you know, Grapefruit Sculpin was great a couple of years ago. I don't know. As a brand, I still trust and appreciate Ballast Point. I also, when you're putting in $1 billion and you're investing $1 billion, I'm sure that you want to shoot for the stars. And I just don't think that they had a real good forecast on what just the forecast of the industry and
yeah.
where people were going. And it's like, you know, Grapefruit Sculpin was your cash cow 3 years ago. But you can't tell me in 5 years from then that we're all still going to be drinking Grapefruit West Coast IPAs.
Yeah.
Like, do not put all of your eggs in that basket. And I think that their expansion was a little too big and a little too fast, and now they're realizing it. And, like, I'm not worried about where the brewery's going. I think that it's going to be fine.
Sure.
But... Yeah, no.
I mean, we all, you know, we never want to make light of a situation where people are losing their jobs.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And it really sucks that, you know, two brewery locations are having to lay off people.
Absolutely.
But I think Jeff Allworth, tremendous journalist who runs Beervana blog, did a really great rundown just yesterday about how, you know, in forecasting out this model 2, 3, 5 years down the road, I don't think Constellation had the foresight into thinking, you know, there's no way that they could have predicted that hazy IPAs would be blowing up as big as they are, that brewed IPAs would be entering
sure.
the market. And so this very traditional West Coast style IPA, which for many, many years dominated the market, it just, you know, they weren't ready to adapt to some of the new
totally.
Trends that came along.
Totally.
And also, I think the biggest thing that was kind of an alarm, even when it first happened, seeing that they were trying to bank on the idea that Sculpin was going to be a national IPA brand, but they were also selling that beer for what, $15 six packs?
15 or 16.
Yeah, it was
super premium.
Yeah, $15.99.
As much as I love that beer, and I do love that beer,
you're crazy.
There are so many local options that are as good, if not better, that are not $15 a six-pack.
And then, right at the same time, Lagunitas rolls in and gets that Heineken money and are selling, you know, $9.99 six-packs or whatever.
Yeah.
And Lagunitas IPA is just, is a rock solid West Coast IPA that has now actually become a real nationwide, international West Coast IPA. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think that they, I mean, yeah, it was a misstep. I don't think that it's like a, I don't think it's a death sentence, but it's like, yeah, you need to adjust on the fly.
Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting, this whole opening up brew pubs model, how that's going to keep going. Mm-hmm. You know, because Anheuser-Busch does that. You know, Constellation was
pretty much all of their acquisitions now have to have brew pubs involved.
Yeah, but given how many local breweries there are, and I think, you know, we even kind of mentioned earlier that education is, you know, there's always like a hurdle there. But I think we're starting to hit the point where our consumers are starting to get a little bit more educated, and they're looking for those local options. Mm-hmm. So, you know, dropping a corporate, even if, you know, even if people don't know it's necessarily corporate, they know it's a franchise more or less.
Sure.
That model might start seeing some, I don't know, I think it'll be interesting pushback to kind of follow that. That's that's kind of my next thing I've been watching in terms of how the industry is shaping a little bit.
I just think that it's, if breweries of that size want to expand, I think that it needs to be a little bit more thoughtful and a little bit less of just like, well, like,
instead
we've
of
got
just a, dumping we, a load
exactly,
of cash.
Exactly. We've got a spot in San Jose. We've got a spot in San Diego. We've got a spot in San Francisco. Like, let's open 5 locations in the next 18 months. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you want your brand to survive and succeed, and if you are still, I'd like to think that at the core of most of all of these breweries and the industry in general is a real culture. And if you're still trying to maintain that culture, then I think that you need to be a little bit more thoughtful about where you're going to open up your next location.
Well, even with Modern Times, I mean, we're seeing, they recently announced they're trying to get some crowdfunding to support their explosive growth. I mean, they've got, I don't know how many locations now, probably
I couldn't
5,
even say
6
either, yeah.
maybe?
Even more? I think, yeah, because now they've got Portland, they've got probably 5 to 6 just in California alone. And now you're seeing, did they perhaps overextend a little bit? I think as an industry, you're starting to see things cool in the beer segment as a whole,
right,
a little bit. And so it's just important that breweries who are trying to grow really try to grow organically. Karen, I'd love
Well, and I don't think you're going to see anything like a Ballast Point ever again. Because
no.
all
I
the
agree.
Brew, I mean, even when it happened, to be in the industry and see the tenured brewers be like,
What? How much?
Like they,
one
you, yeah.
billion?
Did they say B?
Like,
to see that reaction in the tenured crew be like, no way, was just interesting for me to watch and observe and be like, they know this is, there's something not right here.
Yeah. Right.
So I don't think you're ever going to see that again. And I do think, I like watching the breweries that organically grow and take their time. I mean, it took New Belgium 25 years to get in all 50 states.
Sure.
And yes, they're struggling a little bit right now, but they're a respected brewery nationwide. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't this fast, like, massive growth. They really took their time getting to know every, you know, every region, every market, what works for these people. And I think it has to be more methodical like that than this quick, rapid a million breweries growth. Let's just go as quick as we can.
Sure.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yes.
It's
true.
Just, absolutely. That's, I mean.
Yeah. And that local play is so important. There's a lot of breweries that go somewhere and find a distributor and are like, great, we'll ship you our beer. Good luck.
Yep.
Good luck.
Bye.
But you got to put a body there and you have to represent your brand there. And or even build a brewery there and employ people there and be part of the community.
Build a culture.
Exactly. And so I just think taking your time and being methodical and strategic about it. Why are they doing it this way? Somebody's thought about this. There's a reason they're doing it.
Sure.
It goes back to all of that. So I don't think we're going to see this Ballast Point anymore. There's not going to be any more billion-dollar deals, I don't think. Sorry.
No, with that in mind...
Sorry, all brewers will think that was going to happen.
Now, with that in mind, if Constellation would like to write the Porchcast a $1 billion check, we will be very strategic and thoughtful about how we accept that, that check.
We
and,
can call it the Constellation Cast or whatever you want.
Yeah, we'll do whatever you want.
We'll drop that off with our friends at OnTap Credit Union, and they'll gladly
they'll
add that
to
their account.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Karen. I really appreciate you joining us on the show. This has been a fantastic episode 60 of the Porchcast. It's been really great to hear about your all story.
Thank you guys.
Very excited about your expansion.
Thanks.
And looking forward to seeing Hollow Daily as the gluten-free option here throughout Colorado and hopefully beyond.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks to Sam and Sammy. We'll hopefully catch you all very soon for the next episode. This has been the Porchcast on porchdrinking.com. I'm Tristan, and we'll check you later.
Check you later.
Like what you're listening to? Be sure to follow the Porchcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and whatever listening devices you may follow. You can also follow Porch Drinking on Twitter and Instagram at @porchdrinkingco.